Good morning, good morning. We are dancing in with Soul Makassa, Mano Dibango. This is Charlotte Farrell, your own Sister C, right here in the place to be, CJSF Radio 90.1, with your Friday Speak Up Show. Have we got a treat in store for you. Good morning, good morning. This is Charlotte Farrell, your own Sister C, here in the place to be, CJSF Radio 90.1 in Burnaby, CJSF CA, streaming worldwide. Today, have I got a treat in store for you. We're going to be talking about echo healing. We're going to be talking about forest bathing, things you probably never heard of. But I have three superstars here that are going to bring the program and information to you. And I'm going to let each introduce themselves, starting with Carrie.
Hi, my name is Carrie, or Kari Crow, and I'm a co-founder of Eco Wisdom. I have a PhD in psychology and have worked as a professor in the past, and have also experienced pretty significant health issues. And I currently live on a forest preserve, and I have been amazed at how well I feel when I'm in the forest. And that's part of what powers my passion for sharing accessible nature well-being programs and the Nature Guide training programs. That's me.
Well, and I am happy to hear that word powered, because the other audience that's listening is powered by age. Seniors who are savvy, reservoirs of knowledge, and also activists working to protect things like the forest. Next, Kim, introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Kim, and I am a registered massage therapist, shiatsu therapist, and a facilitator with Eco Wisdom and their accessible nature wellness programs. I'm also a mindfulness meditation guide, and I live in Toronto, and I really appreciate everything that I've learned through Eco Wisdom to find more avenues to be around nature. And it's so healthy, so wonderfully healthy.
Well, I'm happy you mentioned all those modalities, because last month I was invited to a workshop virtual, and they said it was going to be 2 hours. And I thought, how am I going to have to stay in front of the computer that long? And people like him, therapists, showed things that you could do, like mindfulness. So we'll hear a bit more about the modalities that are involved in Echo Wisdom, Echo Health. And that brings us to Laurel.
Thanks, Charlotte. I'm Laurel, and I'm a photographer and artist, and I live with a chronic illness. And I'm a longtime colleague and friend of Kari, and have worked with her on many projects in her academic life. And recently, during the pandemic, I called her up and said, I need some community and I need some beautiful things to do, because I knew she'd be up to something interesting, as she always is. And lo and behold, I landed here, and I went to the programs, and I could not believe how effective they were just virtually, these nature bathing programs. And I got further involved technically, and also am a facilitator, and I'm also doing the training.
Well, we're going to be hearing about that training program, but I'm going to go. We talk about wisdom. I learned so much in 2 hours of forest bathing within my apartment, and I'm going to ask Carrie to share more about what is Echo Wisdom.
Well, Eco Wisdom is like this entity that we created, and I'd say it's a lot about community, people coming together and recognizing our place in nature, and looking to nature to understand things like diversity and things like interdependence, and really settling into who we are and how we are in the world. And even if some of us live with disabilities or age-related impairments or chronic illnesses, we are still part of a larger community and we are still part of nature. And so it's really about belonging. I think if you had to really narrow it down, we create these programs. And as I mentioned before, I have this PhD in psychology. I'm really interested in the research and sort of the sort of the clinical practices and their effects on the mind and body and heart. So there's that. There's also this creative piece, and so much is about just being open to the wisdom of nature. And it could look like, you know, you're spending quiet time in nature and you start to see something and it becomes a metaphor for something in your life. And then it becomes giving you like a direction or helps you to answer a question. And so we do certain practices that get us into the body, mindfulness practices to help us to calm the nervous system. And once we do that, then we become receptive and we can be more open to these awesome, awesome, beautiful gifts from nature. And of course, all of this is backed up in science. There's a whole field of science called forest medicine, which originated out of Japan, but has now moved across the around the world. And looking at things like how our natural killer cells, both in terms of number and function, increase when we spend time in nature, our mood improves, our ability to tolerate pain increases. And there's this beautiful thing that I just love observing, which is that people become more empathetic towards one another. And that allows us to connect socially and feeds into the sense of belonging and community building and community capacity building. It's just a beautiful thing to be a part of. Yeah. I'm not sure if that answered all of your question there, but.
No, but it gave some touch points of other things we're going to be talking about. But this green prescription, I'm looking because we're using Zoom and I can see you instead of us others just being able to hear you. But there's a tree behind you and it just looks like it has its arms out where it can embrace you. And I was thinking of the green prescription. That is something when you talk about all the benefits that are there. But if a person just goes to their employer and says, well, I need 10 minutes to go take a walk, they might not honor it. But tell us a bit about the green prescription and how that might help a person to be able to engage with nature.
Well, you know, it's interesting. It's sort of like sometimes we need science or we need medical validation for us to really adopt a concept. But ultimately, I find that people who practice nature connection, it's almost like they're relearning something that they deeply know intuitively. So the green prescription is helpful because it has the medical backing. So people who are just a little bit curious, maybe even a little bit suspicious about this, you know, forest bathing, or in Japanese, it's called Shinrin-yoku. You know, what is this practice? But when you have medical doctors who've been through their training and they're actually prescribing going into parks, and this is something that's now expanded to most of the provinces across the country, started in BC parks, then Ontario, and now it's most of the parks have some kind of program where medical doctors or other people who are registered, like physiotherapists, can also be involved. And in this, they have a resource where they can have guidelines around what they might prescribe or recommend or suggest to their clients. So it's interesting because, I mean, I think it's important, but a lot of the work we do is like directly connected to community and we're doing it for ourselves. And it becomes almost like a powerful form of peer support. So while we recognize and we think it's wonderful that there are these people are talking about green prescriptions, right? That this is something that we can do for ourselves and it's free, right? We're not talking about high medical costs, right? It actually has, you can, if you go on a 3-day, 2-night you know, weekend away, you can increase the function of your white blood cells, your NK cells, by 40%. And that increase in your body's ability to fight infection will be sustained for over a month. I mean, it's just incredible. And there are other studies that look at 50 minutes, that's under an hour, within an urban park. And they're still finding all kinds of incredible physiological benefits. So while it is wonderful that there are these park prescription programs and that doctors are getting on board, it is also something that communities can do for themselves. And I really, that's something that, you know, we've been working with disability organizations, for example, and you know, it's great to see people come together and recognize and experience the benefits on their own. Yeah.
Yeah, that's something that our friends from senior centers, there's about six different senior centers that participate in the Powered by Age podcast program. And some of them have been activists that have worked for things like breaks at work, just good things for the community. So I think knowing about that, being able to connect with you and talk with it, it might help other people to know, how can my group of friends that are in our building, like some people live in a co-op, you know, what are some things we can do to make this accessible? We're going to give you a chance at the end to say contact points, but right now, could you give an email or a website that people could contact you with to get to know more about this?
Sure, it's info@ecowisdom.ca, and the website is just www.ecowisdom.ca. Pretty straightforward. Yeah, so it's ecowisdom, wisdom, ecowisdom.ca.
That's the place to be.
yeah, we've got lots of information on the website. Yeah.
And speaking of modalities, I'm a poet, and I heard Kim mention poetry is one of the forms. And even during that day, that seemed like it was going to be a long program, you used poetry. Kim, what do you have to say or share about using poetry as a modality, along with some of the other modalities that you use?
Well, with poetry, I think we can, even just listening to poetry, sometimes the words are so evocative, the phrases are evocative, and often you'll find a lot of poets write about nature and being in nature and how much it does for them. And even if we just visualize what their, you know, very poetic offerings about nature, we can benefit from that. Just visualizing ourselves in that same place, or opening up to whatever it is they're talking about, sky, stars, water. We, as soon as we say water, we can feel it kind of flowing in our body. And I think personally, what we forget is that we ourselves are nature. Mm-hmm. And we
imagine that.
Yeah. And it's a very important thing to remember. And when we connect with nature, we kind of, I think part of connecting with nature is seeing that, you know, trees that bend in different ways and they're not perfect helps us to connect with ourselves and our imperfections, and give us the ability to accept our imperfections where we are at this moment. There's so many different benefits from it. And using poetry is another meditative tool. There's so many tools that we can use. Sound, just the a waterway can be another way to get into that mindfulness groove. So many different ways. And these are all, I think, just tools that we give out. And whatever calls to you the most, you can take it home and work with it.
Now, I like the fact that you had many different modalities. And even if you weren't outside, it was hot. I'm in a place where on that week, I think it was about 100 degrees outside. And you said, well, if you have a plant on your desk, and I thought, well, that's something. There's a plant in the living room. And I got the plant and the encouragement to find something different. And it was philodendron. And of all the leaves, one leaf had these two white things, and it looked like two waterfalls. My brain pictured two waterfalls coming out of the leaf. Mm-hmm. And it was just so simple. But having a structure, having something like the Eco Wisdom Program, or having something that the trainers do with people, gives you ideas of how you can not have to go to the forest. You might not have money to go to the forest that day, or the gas. But something as simple as meditating and looking and observing a plant really taught me a lot. This little plant behind me, I looked at it afterwards and I said, have I given it any water? There's some little buds that look tight. But thank you for explaining how these different modalities work in. Laurel, in working, we have people that have used being on the podcast and doing a simple segment of the podcast, just being validated. When you talked about it validates people who might have a disability or gives people a chance to experience and learn their own bodies as well as how they interact. Can you share some of what happens? Like, you are also involved in the training. Can you explain some of those processes and how that helps?
Well, an essential key to the program, or is essential foundation to the program, is to be giving options, always options. And their options, for instance, very simple one is a sort of body meditation that Kari does, which is can start with looking up, breathing in and looking down and breathing out. And then you can add your shoulders and you can add your arms. And one of the things that Kari always does is encourages us to try all of these options, even if you're able to do, you know, the whole arm movement, just to experience the different ways of doing things. And it validates that as not just, well, that's all you can do, but this has value for everybody, trying things in different ways. And having all of the options laid in front of you, instead of a lot of people with disabilities may be concerned, like that it's going to be 2 hours, it's going to be too long, I'm not going to be able to sit there, for instance. And so there's the stress, which is going to inhibit you, first of all, but you may feel you need to ask permission, or maybe you don't want to ask permission, but to be given permission to be exactly who you are without any real, nothing unusual about that. It's just part of us that we're all different and we're all going to do things differently for different reasons on different days. And that is a strong validation of accepting yourself and others exactly who you are in that moment.
I like the choices, because so often, I mean, I've worked as a health educator and a nutritionist, and I've worked with people who resist things because you just get limited options, you know, and it hasn't asked the person to experience, you know, you might like to try brown rice, or you might like to try something else, rather than saying you have to have this, this, this. So I really like the options, because when people aren't told you have to do something, probably everybody that was on the podcast or on that program tried the different things just because of the way that you presented it. Said, well, you know, you could go outside, or you could do this, or you could write a poem, or you could do a song. But just the different options really make it healthy in and of itself. Too much of health has been really rigid. And sometimes, you know, like those commercials where they tell you about something that's great for your head, and then at the end it says you might get a crack in your skull. I like this, that, you know, there weren't any things that, you know, that you had to say at the end, you know, may also cause. Can you tell me a bit about the training? You're offering the opportunity for other people to learn how to do this program.
Yeah, it's a 6-month training program, and we have this wonderful team of people who've been part of this Eco Wisdom community who are offering their services as mentors. So it's a virtual program right now, although we're thinking at some point we might add some possible in-person components now that we're moving into opening up a little bit more. But there are definite advantages to having it virtual in terms of accessibility and in terms of bringing together people from all over the world. One of our trainees was traveling and went to South America, Central America, and was able to show us the kind of landscapes and the plants that she was seeing. This next time around, it looks like we're going to have someone from the UK, someone from New Mexico. Like, it's really interesting to bring people from different geographies, maybe different cultural backgrounds together. And so, so we do most of the training is online. We have an online course that people can move through at their own pace. We offer sort of parameters. We offer a framework with the understanding that if something happens in one's life and you need more time, we're there to listen and to offer extra support and extra time. So there's always built in, because most of the trainers are living with disability or chronic illness ourselves. And so we understand that we can have some limitations and require some modifications and be competent and develop and refine our skills, both as trainers, but also as guides. And so, and guides and training. So we have an online component, we have the mentors that work one-to-one with you and in small groups, and then we have live sessions that, so they're online, but they're live. So we come together and we are able to explore some of the concepts. We have a wonderful array of guest speakers, including naturopathic doctors talking about plants and all of the medicinal properties and how to go about making plant teas when you're offering a guide program, all the way from that to sort of some mindful movement. We've had people come in and lead us in, you know, mindful breathing and mindful movement, and just a whole array of resources. And we talk about, you know, you mentioned earlier, Charlotte, that you have some people from sort of activist sort of protection of the forest type organizations. And a lot of what we're doing, of course, my partner, Dave, who's the co-founder of EcoWisdom with me, and we live on this forest preserve, and he's an environmental educator and been very involved in environmental issues for 30 years now. And so what we've done is we've brought together the mindfulness. I'm also a mindfulness meditation teacher. So we bring together the mindfulness and activism. So the course also includes information about ecology and what's happening with the climate. But we are also learning about mindfulness. We actually have a subcomponent that's all about mindfulness, so that when you become a guide, you can comfortably lead a nature-based mindfulness meditation, a short one, but you'll learn things about how do you start the meditation, what do you do during the meditation, how do you wrap it up at the end, and how do you always make sure that people feel that they have choice, because this makes it more trauma sensitive, right? We're trying to be trauma informed in how we offer this program. And this kind of practice, nature-based mindfulness, is much more accessible to people, for example, who have a trauma background, compared to sitting meditation with your eyes shut. So if you have your eyes open and you give people lots of choice and you say, find something that is pleasant, and what is pleasant to you will be different from what is pleasant to me, and that's perfectly fine. Just go find something in your natural, open all of your senses and find something that is pleasant. And then we will guide you in a process of going deeper into connecting with that pleasantness. And it becomes like this embodied experience that you learn to cultivate and grow and bring into the body and to as a source of nurturing as well as belonging. Yeah. So we're really excited about the training program. We've got a growing number of mentors. We've got currently a team of 12, but every year I see it's growing. It's growing, and we've got guest educators as well, and people with all kinds of backgrounds, including people who have backgrounds in contemplation and contemplation practices. And that's another key thing about our process is I'm also trained as an interfaith spiritual director. And so we bring this sense of non-judgment to the way we communicate with one another. Yeah.
You know, that is so important right now where we're at a time of people yelling at each other, being so upset and hanging so much on words rather than meaning and feeling. So I think this is really important. Can you tell again, how would people send their information or get their information to indicate that they're interested in having the training?
All they have to do is send an email message to info@ecowisdom.ca. Yes, and we would be very happy to get back to them. We also have information on the website. I believe it's under services and then training. And then within there, there is a brochure, a two-page brochure. There is the fee schedule. There is all kinds of information about the topics that we cover, which includes, Indigenous philosophy, ecological science and citizen science. How can we actually be involved in protecting and monitoring the environment in our neighborhoods? Ranging from those topics to, I don't know, we cover a lot of different things, you know, but it's interesting because there's like the topics and then there's the processes. So we really embody and through the mentors and the instructors guiding people through the program, we emphasize self-compassion, we emphasize mindfulness, and we emphasize contemplative communication. And so through those sort of things that become integrated in how we teach and how we are with one another, then we end up with these beautiful guides that lead these programs. And they say, you know, we were going to do this program and this thing happened with the weather. So we were able to say, you know what? I'm bringing self-compassion to myself. It's not going to be perfect. It's not going to be exactly the way I planned it, but that's okay. You know, I'm going to bring mindfulness meditation. I'm going to bring nature connection into my own practice as a guide, and I'm going to then be flexible and move on in an appropriate way if the circumstances shift a little bit unexpectedly during a program that you're leading. So we've been so impressed with the guides. Before we even finished the 6-month training, we had our three guides in British Columbia who are working together. And that's another thing we emphasize is, you know, collaborative, like bring in a friend, don't do this. You don't have to do this on your own. This is really, our approach is very much a collaborative model of leadership. So the group in BC were three people with quite significant levels of physical disability, and they worked together as a team. And before we even finished the 6 months, they were leading programs, and they have another program this weekend in Surrey.
That sounds exciting. You know, part of our audience are college students, people who are at, because CJSF is on Simon Fraser University campus. But are there ways that maybe students who are looking for a project to do in a class might connect that with you to focus it around forest healing, forest bathing, or any aspect of the program? Is that possible?
Yeah, it is. In fact, we are currently partnering with a university and they are collecting data on our participants. Not that our participants are, you know, research subjects, but, you know, they're agreeing to be interviewed and surveyed about what's happening in terms of their mood, but also what's happening in terms of their health promotion behaviors. You know, so what we find is we do this 2.5-hour program online where people have the choice to work with their houseplants inside or go step outside and then come back to the computer screen, having people have a break from the computer screen, but we hold the space. And then by the end, we find that people feel the benefits in their bodies and in their mood, and then they're motivated by that to keep going with the practice. And so that's part of what this research study is looking at with through the surveys is, are you continuing with your nature connection practices? What does that look like? And also pre-post in terms of mood and pain levels, perceptions, that kind of thing. So, you know, because I have My background is as a university professor. I don't think I mentioned that before, but I was actually a professor of disability studies before I became severely disabled with a neurologic disability. And I was also a senior research fellow with the Canadian Institutes of Health Research. So I'm really interested in the health benefits and of this practice. So we would welcome a partnership with a university student. And I should say, these practices, they support, you know, I have a, my daughter is in her third year of biomedical science, and she knows this. When you spend this mindful time in nature, you can increase your capacity to pay attention. You can increase your capacity to remember. There are definite neurocognitive benefits in addition to mood, which of course intersect, right? They all interrelate, and your physical well-being. So you're less likely, you know, in theory, I mean, because we know that it supports immune function, in theory, you can sustain a healthier body as well. So it's great for university students.
Well, you said you were happy when you found a friend that had something that you could work with. What is the thing that you're most passionate about with this program?
I guess there's two areas. It's hard to narrow down, but the most important one is community and feeling like I belong. And just to continue on what you'd asked me before, to be able to go somewhere and be exactly who you are is profound. Yes. You know, that is what makes you belong, really. That is the central aspect of belonging. And I was looking for a community. And I didn't know what Kari was up to, but I know that she's always interested in building community. And I found community there. And all the people that Kari mentioned who come to, you know, do help you, a naturopath or someone who's coming to talk about breathing and meditation, these people don't go away because they want to stay. So this community, even though we were small, and I think that's a great thing, people really want to stay. I think that's amazing. Every session we see people who come back and they come back and they come back just for the, I'm not talking about the training, I'm talking about the actual program. And that is, to me, the best part. I think that's the best thing for my health right now, especially after the pandemic.
And I think you recorded some of the responses people had after that 1.5 hour program.
I did, yeah.
How did you go about, and you were doing a survey as well to see whether people who experienced it by being physically on the property and people who experienced it through Zoom or other virtual media, were you surprised at the response that you got?
Maybe we could pass that to Kim because she was one of the research assistants on that project.
Yes.
Sure. Yeah, I did a lot of the surveys. And I guess what it wasn't surprising, but it really felt great to know that the responses were really positive. And mostly, and there was beautiful responses about being in community, because a lot of the people coming into the sessions have different abilities and are dealing with different types of chronic illnesses. And a lot of times I heard that, you know, that meant so much to be in a community and not feel odd or ignored in any way, that they were embraced, and to see people around them being non-judgmental and compassionate really meant a lot. Also, things like physical pain and discomfort levels reduced significantly right after the program, right after they had participated in the program. So that was huge. And I think every single person I surveyed said that they would be coming back to another program because it meant so much to them. And that's what Laura was talking about as well, was it really brings you in. And a lot of people mentioned afterwards that just seeing nature, taking time to look at nature in a different way in their daily life, even if it was just taking a break from the computer and looking over at their plant for a few minutes and getting drawn into the colors and the textures of green and whatever is in front of them. Just giving that rest and that break, especially when we've been in a pandemic where we're almost, we've been in computer land, you know, for hours and hours every day, to get that break away from it meant so much to so many people, and just gave them reminders of, oh yeah, yeah, I do like to get out. I do like to garden. I can just bring a little bit of contemplation to it, and it deepens and enriches their lives that much more. So quite interest. The surveys were fascinating, and
Yeah, unlike a lot of surveys that people ask people to take part in after something, I was impressed by the number of people that made comments. We're going to hear a few of those.
Oh, yeah, Kim.
Well, I would just like to say I sort of entered into this not knowing what I was doing. And I have to say that no one will have any regrets taking this course. One thing I love about it is it's very, very much based on your experience rather than all the academic stuff. In the beginning, I was writing down notes all the time, trying to memorize things, and that's not what this is about. It really is about your own personal experience. And regardless of what you do with the course, you will never regret all the things that you learned. It's amazing. It's really opened my perspective on everything and the planet and all living beings.
Thank you, Kim. That's nice. And I should say, you know, speaking of the beings, all living beings, one of our two primary textbooks is by Robin Wall Kimmerer, Breeding Sweetgrass. And so we do, as we learn and explore Indigenous philosophy, we learn these different ways that language can shape the way we experience nature and frame nature, for example. And really, really go through like a personal journey of shifting perspectives and ways of being in nature, but also just ways of being. I see Laurel nodding. Yeah. And Erin has her hand up.
Those of you who are listening who haven't gone through it, I'm sure you have questions, and I hesitated to jump in, but my enthusiasm is such as I just had to say something. And this program came along at the right time for me. I am convinced that each person who's listening has a timeline and there's a reason if this is right for you. My other point that I'd like to make is I live on the edge of Algonquin Park, and there's a visitor's bookstore here. And we were just talking about this approach of wanting to connect to something larger through nature is exploding. And I think we have an opportunity here to be part of something that is really special. And there's lots of different ways that you can approach it. But my testimonial would be that I have not experienced, and I have gone to other programs, one that combines the different perspectives that Kari and David have put together. So I would tell you that whatever's happening in your life and whatever you happen to enjoy around you, it's going to make a really special experience. That's it.
Thank you, Erin. Linda?
Add to that is that I was hiking in Pacific Spirit Park this summer at UBC, and they often echo hikes. So it's really spreading all over the world that our ecology and our nature are really important. And just to add to what Carrie said is that you don't only apply these principles to nature, but to your whole life. Like in Robin's book, one of the principles is don't take more than you need. So when you go grocery shopping, do I really need 6 onions? No, I only need 2, so I should only take 2. And so it spreads into your everyday life as well.
And, you know, as Erin said, it is exploding worldwide. And there are many different approaches. And ours, as far as I can tell, it's the only one. I mean, that's part of the reason why Harriet and I connected, is this interest in how do we make nature connection accessible and inclusive. And this is not, unfortunately, happening in other in some of the training programs that I've been having had experience with. There wasn't the interest, there wasn't the inclination. And then there's also the factor of other programs, you know, flying everybody to Costa Rica to do their 6-month training, and the ecological footprint of that model. That also Dave and I find problematic. We live off grid. We collect rainwater. We melt snow. This is our life. We don't push our lifestyle onto anybody else, but we try to share our deep concern and reverence for the natural world. And that it is our pleasure and joy to live in the beautiful way that we do, that is sometimes taxing and sometimes inconvenient, but it is a joy because it's coming from a place of love and care and compassion to all beings.
Now, I want to ask you about the parks. Yesterday, you made a presentation with the parks. Could you tell me a bit more about what is formally now going on with the Parks Department in connection to eco wisdom?
Kim, do you want to answer? Yeah, do you want to go
ahead? Sure. It was, sorry, I don't have the thing in front of me at the moment. It was a thing to access, it was an Accessible Parks Canada conference, and they are looking into how to make parks, national parks across Canada, more accessible by 2040. And so they're in the middle of a conference right now. They've been doing it the last few days and have had different people speak to them about ideas of how to make things more accessible, what's important for people with disabilities, what would make it easier for people to access different types of national parks. And when we were speaking yesterday, we talked about the importance of nature in our lives and what that does for our health, and how during the pandemic so many people took part in parks and, you know, kind of almost rediscovered nature, because during lockdown there wasn't that much else to do, really. But a lot of different types of populations didn't have as easy access to those spaces. And that includes people living in poverty, and that disproportionately includes people living with disabilities or chronic illnesses, new immigrants, those who identify as Black, Indigenous, or people of color. And to not have access to parks is an equity issue, especially when we're talking about health. So I'll let Kari take it on from there.
I think, you know, that was one of our main points, was that, you know, it is so important. And then we moved into talking about our work, our community-based projects, and we've been fortunate enough to get, you know, a few grants here and there from TD Park People, and then also the Canada Healthy Communities Initiative grant, to help us really develop and refine this model for both the programming, the 2.5 hour programming, and also the 6 month training. And both are accessible or inclusive. We're really trying to make it available for people who live with disability or chronic illness or age related challenges. We moved actually into recommending that parks have these little side trails, because often we have like the main trail and you've got bicycles and you've got people who are running and you've got people maybe who are using a cane who don't have great balance. You know, you've got people, I have issues with overstimulation. So having lots of people like loud, music or whatever, it's really challenging. So having these little side trails that are designed specifically for forest bathing, this is what we ended up, concluding, is that this is one of the things that would make things more accessible, because it's great to go for a walk, but you don't want to be knocked over by a bike, and you want to be able to get right up to the edge of the water of a pond or a stream, right? And so the sound of water, for example, calms the central nervous system. We know that the parasympathetic nervous system is activated by sounds of birds, water, wind. And so when we can get away from the busyness into these little pod areas that are quiet, where we can have multi-sensory experiences, we can nurture ourselves and build that resiliency. And find peace and quiet. So that was one of the things that we talked about at the end of the talk. Yeah.
And who was the sponsor for that program that still has a conference going on today?
It's part of a KITE research program. And you can find more information on their website, which is Accessible Parks Canada. And I believe the program will be recorded, or most of the conference presentations will be recorded and posted at some point on their website. Yeah.
Yes, we might have them on or air parts of their recordings, because I think it's very interesting. The icon for trails is often a person on a bike. You don't really think of that, these side trails, there are people with walkers, canes, a number of different devices that need to feel welcome to be on the trail, and also to be safe while they're going on a smaller trail.
Could I add something here, Charlotte?
Certainly.
Yes, just to what you're saying there, my mother's 94, and she's using a walker, and I would not take her somewhere busy. She would just feel so vulnerable, and that would just take everything away from the benefits, obviously. But someone mentioned at the conference, and I don't think it was our group, but I was listening to another speaker at the conference, Neufeld, yeah, Jen, I can't remember her first name. Anyway, and just talking about, we know how much the pandemic highlighted the discriminatory policies and realities for people. People who had less had even less, it just showed everything up. And I just think she gave the example, because I know that, people with disabilities, if for instance, don't have a lot of money and it's going to be difficult to do this or that. But she was really very specific about people who were people were nervous to take public transit. So that was one reason that they couldn't get into nature. So you think, well, why would it be any different? But that was one really solid, concrete reason that people were even further limited. I see Carrie has something to say. No, that's good, because I knew you would.
I was going to say, Laura, I think that was actually part of our presentation.
Okay, I thought, because Kim said it. I was going to say, I'm thinking, was it Kim or not? Yeah. Could you say it again? I thought that was so important.
But yeah, that was a point that we had heard. And so we thought it was important to put it into the presentation. There was one other thing I wanted to mention, Charlotte, and that is that one of our guest speakers for the training is a senior, and she's a caregiver for her husband, who's been undergoing cancer treatment. So, you know, she has some minor, you know, age-related health issues, but she is very involved in caregiving, which is a very demanding role. And she has come repeatedly to these programs that we offer, the 2.5-hour programs. And she's a gardener. She loves her plants. And every summer she would have a garden in her backyard. And this last winter, she created an indoor garden. And she used her nature connection practices, mindful nature connection practices, to go deeply into her connection with her indoor houseplants. And it became this resource. And every time she walked by this table with all these collection of plants, she would pause, she would reach out and touch a leaf. She would look at the way the light would come in the window and sort of illuminate some of the color in the leaf. And so she came as a guest educator to the training program and shared her knowledge and experience of using indoor forest bathing, indoor mindful nature connection as a way to resource herself, given her demanding caregiving responsibilities. And she's a delight. We just love her.
Well, we hear the word accessible and inclusive a lot. In this program, you demonstrated so many ways that it is inclusive. Programs too that have something in it for me, caregivers are caring a lot. And the fact that yours has something that helps the caregiver, something as simple as having that plant to stop and rather than seeing the plant, being able to know a mindfulness exercise to do with it, or being able to go outside and just looking at spotting a tree. I really hadn't thought about, you know, how people say, that's my person, that's my team. So now when I walk in, that's my tree. Yeah, that's my flower. So it is wonderful that you spent this time with me. We'll have to do a second program because you've given so much information. I'm sure whetted a lot of people's appetite about learning about forest bathing. I thought, that's not going out. You know, I pictured a nudist beach when you said forest bathing, and it's so much more. And it's something that at this time when we've had to be 6 degrees apart, everything is talked about staying 2 feet apart or 6 feet apart or two these arms stretched out, you're showing something of arms brought in. I'm just reading a book called Lovability, and the person is talking about one of the signs of a healthy community is hugs. And so you talk about hugging a tree, hugging a plant, but also hugging a person. So I'm just thankful for all the information that you've shared. I want to get your numbers set again where people can learn about the 2-hour programs as well as learn about the training if they want to be considered as a candidate for the training. And without further ado, I'm Sister C. This has been Speak Up, Listen Up, Act Upon. You'll hear us again next week at 10. Before I say that, let me have Carrie say again the places where you can connect with Echo Health.
You can reach us at info@ecowisdom.ca. And we also have a website, and it's www.ecowisdom.ca. And on the website, you'll see information under services. Under services, you will find a whole lot of information about our training program. And we do actually have scholarships for people who are looking to use this training for social and environmental justice work.
Okay. And so just in emailing you, they could inquire on how do you apply for one of those scholarships.
Of course, yes. Okay. Yes.
And if a company, any company that's listening that says, hey, that sounds like something great, how can I get involved? They are welcoming additional sponsors and funders for scholarships. So just get on that phone or get on the internet and contact them.
We have some awesome people, candidates who are doing, that have ideas about using this with people who are home insecure, people with addiction issues, people who are in vulnerable populations, and they themselves don't have a lot of resources. So then we end up trying to find a sponsor or trying to find a grant, which is, as you can imagine, quite a bit of work. So if there is anybody out there, a park association or a company or anyone who wants to sponsor, we do have one full scholarship for somebody with a disability in honor of a member of our team who passed away. But doing something like that really would fuel all kinds of repercussions at the community-based level for in terms of service. And that service is really about ultimately about what we're about is service. And we often hear in our final circle people talking about the belonging piece and the love and the feeling like you're just being held by nature, but also by one another.
Right. Something that you hoped for, but you find it actually exists. It really is happening in my lifetime. And it also contributes to that goal that's part of the Powered by Age, creating an age-friendly city. Age-friendly cities where people from 8 to 80 feel like they have a part in decision-making and that there's some activity or something that they can do and enjoy life. So thank you so much for spending time to talk. Kim Dunlop, Carrie Grove, and Laurel Goodings.
Thank you so much, Charlotte, for having us here today. It's just been a delight.
This is your own Sister C, Charlotte Farrell, thanking you for spending time with us this morning, hearing about eco-wisdom, forest bathing, and ways that we can share accessible nature well-being. My guests were Dr. Carrie Crowe, Laurel Goodings, and Kim Dunlop. See you again next week at 10, but when people ask me what time it is, I always say it's love time, poem time. Love time, poem time, love time, poem time, love time, poem time, time for words from heaven to shine. Love time, poem time, time for words to pattern and rhyme. Love time, poem time, time for words to wash the wounds, bind the lashes and play bassoon. Love time, time for poems, poets and singers, time to untie all life's ringers. Poem time, love time, time for you to reveal to me, unravel all your mystery. Time for joy and utter grace, rest from toiling in this place. Place of poems, place of words, place for love instead of swords. Love time, poem time, poem time. Love time, love time, poem time, times for words from heaven to shine. Love time, poem time, time for words to pattern and rhyme. Love time, poem time, times for words to wash the wounds, bind the lashes and play bassoon. Love time, poem time, poem time, love time, time for poems, poets, singers, times to untie all life's ringers. Time for you to reveal to me, unravel all your mystery. Time for joy and utter grace, rest from toiling in this place. Place of poems, place of words, place for love instead of swords. Love time, poem time, poem time, love time, love time, poem time, poem time.